From Matthew 11, 2 to 11. John the Baptist, who was in prison, heard about all the things the Messiah was doing. So he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else?" Jesus told them, "Go back to John and tell him what you have heard and seen. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to life, and the good news is being preached to the poor. And tell him the good news is, and tell him God blesses those who do not turn away because of me." As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began talking about him to the crowds. "What kind of man did you go into the wilderness to see? Was he a weak reed, swayed by every breath of wind? Or were you expecting to see a man dressed in expensive clothes? No, people with expensive clothes live in palaces. Were you looking for a prophet? Yes, and he is more than a prophet. John is the man to whom the scriptures refer to when they say, 'Look, I am sending my messenger ahead of you. He will prepare the way for you.' I tell you the truth, of all who have ever lived, none is greater than John the Baptist. Yet even the least person in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he is." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Julietta. Well, good morning. Morning. Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else? Last week, Malcolm spoke on John the Baptist's ministry of calling people to repentance and then pointing them to the one who was to come, Jesus. He described John as someone who moved God's story of salvation forward, as well as being someone who looked to keep God's people on track. Malcolm described John as a yes person, someone who was available and obedient to all that God wanted to do through him. In this morning's passage, though, we find John in prison, and there's a question he needs to ask. Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else? There are perhaps times in life when questions we never thought we'd ask bubble up to the surface. Moments when the world doesn't look the way we thought it had been promised, or when God doesn't act the way we thought he would. When our faith, which was once straightforward and confident, find itself wobbling under the weight of disappointment or confusion. And in today's passage, we see that John the Baptist knew something about that. John the prophet, who dressed in camel hair, the fearless voice crying in the wilderness, the one who denounced judgment, repentance, and the imminent arrival of God's long-awaited kingdom, now sits chained in prison. You might remember that King Herod had taken exception to John's preaching, particularly to John's condemnation of him for marrying his brother's ex-wife. And this was all part of John's announcement that God's kingdom, God's true king, was on the way, that Herod wasn't the real king and that God would replace him. Is it any wonder then that Herod has John put in prison? John, the one who baptized Jesus, now waits powerless in Herod's dungeon. John has staked his entire life on the belief that God was finally acting to make all things new. But right now, the kingdom that John had been announcing seems nowhere in sight. Right now, in prison, John is disappointed and he's confused. He's heard about what Jesus is doing, and it doesn't sound at all like he was expecting. John was perhaps expecting Jesus to be a kind of Elijah-like figure, an Elijah-like character who would sweep through Israel as Elijah had done, dealing with the prophets of Baal. John was perhaps looking forward to that day when Jesus would confront Herod, would topple him from his throne, become king in his place, and get his cousin out of prison. But right now, as we've heard, John is disappointed, confused, and chained in a prison cell. And so John sends his disciples to question Jesus and ask, "Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else?" Here is John, a man filled with the Spirit from before his birth, asking if he's got it wrong, asking if Jesus really is who he claims to be. But Jesus responds to John's question in a way that surprises us and would have surprised John too. Go back, tell him what you've heard and seen, Jesus says. Jesus doesn't respond with a sort of brilliantly articulated argument or defend his identity or his vocation. Instead, Jesus responds with evidence and signs which echo the promises of Isaiah. Jesus responds with evidence and signs, with fingerprints of God's kingdom breaking in to the world. It's a kingdom, as we've heard, that John has longed for, has worked for, but is now struggling to recognize. Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else? John finds himself in prison because he's dared to speak truth to power and has proclaimed that God was about to cleanse Israel and sweep away injustice once and for all. But instead of judgment, Jesus is throwing parties for sinners, he's healing centurion servants, and he's telling people to forgive their enemies. Perhaps then we might understand John's questions not as doubt, but rather as faithful, kingdom-shaped question that's grounded in disappointment. It's John saying, I thought the kingdom was going to look like this, but actually it's looking like this. John's question then isn't doubt, it isn't unbelief, but rather can be understood as the faithful cry of a disciple trying to reconcile the God he knows with what he's seeing. Perhaps we've experienced moments like this. Like John, what are the unmet expectations, the disappointments that we're carrying or that we're wrestling with at this time? Perhaps we believe that God would bring healing, but instead, illness still lingers. Perhaps we believe that God would open a door, but the door remains firmly shut. Perhaps we believe that following Jesus would bring clarity, but instead life feels foggier than ever. And so firstly then, if that's where you are, if you're in a season of disappointment and confusion, I want to say to you and reassure you that it's okay to ask, is this really what the kingdom is supposed to look like? As we've heard, rather than respond to John's disciples by saying, of course I'm the one you've been waiting for, Jesus responds with evidence and signs which echo the promises of Isaiah. Jesus responds by saying, go back, tell John what you've heard and what you've seen. Jesus responds by pointing out the visible works of God that are happening right in front of them. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have good news proclaimed to them. In other words, Jesus is saying, John, the kingdom is here, it's just not happening in the way you expected. Throughout this chapter of Matthew, Jesus is dealing with the fact that what he's doing is not what Jesus is not what people are expecting him to do. Jesus knows it, is facing it, and believes that this is the way to go, that this is the way to bring in God's kingdom, even though it isn't like others had imagined. It's clear too that there's nothing random about what Jesus is up to and what he's doing. Instead, everything that Jesus is doing are markers and signals that God is finally returning to rescue his people, as the prophets had said he would. God's kingdom is arriving with signs of compassion, of healing, of restoration, and of mercy. In effect, Jesus is saying, John, look around you. The promises are coming true. Israel's hope is being fulfilled. The long-awaited return of the Lord is happening right now, here and now, in me. Tom Wright describes Jesus as bringing in God's kingdom, but rather than storming in with power, he's arriving with mercy. when we look at Jesus' ministry, we find that he wasn't thinking of himself as Elijah calling down fire from heaven. Rather, Jesus is thinking of passages like we find in Isaiah 35, great prophecies of what would happen, not when Israel was judged and condemned, but instead restored after judgment. In these prophecies, we see that the exile would be over, the blind and the lame would be healed, and God's people would be set free at last. John was expecting Jesus to bring judgment, but instead he brings joy. The puzzle, the challenge for John, perhaps for many of us, is this. What if God's power looks like healing? What if God's glory looks like mercy? What if God's kingdom looks like broken people being restored, one person at a time? As John's disciples are turning to leave, Jesus says, God blesses those who do not fall away because of me. In other words, Jesus says, John, don't trip up over the kind of Messiah I am. Don't let your expectations or hopes blind you to what God is actually doing. It's not a rebuke of John. Rather, it's an invitation into a deeper understanding of God. Because God's kingdom is bigger and richer and more beautiful than John had ever imagined. So what does this mean for us? Well, just as Jesus tells his disciples to look at the evidence, he invites us to do the same. Look at what God is doing. Pay attention, he says. Too often we might find ourselves asking, where is God? Why isn't he acting? Why doesn't he just fix this? But perhaps the kingdom is already breaking in. It's just that we're not always looking where it's happening. Perhaps we're looking somewhere else. Maybe healing looks like reconciliation rather than a cure. Maybe the justice we long for begins with forgiveness. Maybe the kingdom is growing, but quietly, like yeast in dough or a seed in soil. In the same way that Isaiah prophesied, the signs of God's kingdom breaking in today look much like they did then. Eyes are opened, perhaps not always physically, but spiritually. The lame walk, perhaps not always in body, but rather in restored purpose. Outsiders are welcomed into community. The voiceless are given dignity. And people who perhaps had lost all hope are now given new life and fresh hope. The poor and the forgotten are hearing good news, perhaps for the first time. The question then isn't whether the kingdom is here. It's do we have the eyes to see it? In the second half of our passage, after John's disciples leave with Jesus' message, something beautiful happens. Jesus turns to the crowd and publicly affirms John. Jesus refuses to let John's question define him. He refuses to let John's vulnerability diminish him. Jesus refuses to let the crowd misunderstand John's confusion and struggle. Instead, Jesus asks the crowd, what did you go into the wilderness to see? A reed swayed by the wind? A man in comfortable royal clothing? Of course not. They went out to see a prophet, and more than a prophet. John wasn't like the royalty they knew. He was nothing like Herod, whose emblem on his coins was a Galilean reed waving in the wind. John wasn't dressed in the sort of clothes that the rich and famous people, especially royalty, would wear. John was different. He was a prophet, and not just any old prophet, but the prophet that previous prophets had spoken about. John was the one destined to get the path ready for God's Messiah to walk along when he arrived. And I think we can see in this passage that Jesus is proud of John. And in verse 11, Jesus declares that John is the greatest person who ever lived. He says that because John had the courage to prepare the way for God's kingdom, even when he didn't fully understand how it would unfold. Jesus then says, even the least person in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he is. It's an unexpected twist. So what can it mean for us? Well, I think it means that in Jesus, something radically new is happening. A new era, a new creation. A new kingdom where our closeness, our proximity to Jesus is what matters most. Not our pedigree or our heritage, not any prophetic role or any spiritual achievements we might point to. John the Baptist is the person who stands at the hinge point of history. But Jesus is saying even the smallest disciple, even the most forgotten follower, stands inside a kingdom that John has only glimpsed. What does this kingdom look like? It looks like Jesus. Jesus' list of Isaiah-shaped miracles isn't just proof of his identity. It's proof of God's character. It's a preview of God's future. It's the shape of our salvation and the template of our discipleship. It's also the great reversal of all human expectations. We perhaps expect power, but God comes as a servant. We perhaps expect judgment, but God brings healing. We perhaps expect a throne, but God kneels beside us with a towel. This is the radical nature of the gospel. God brings salvation, not by force, but through love. It's why John struggled. It's why we struggle too. But if God looks like Jesus, if the kingdom looks like restoration, mercy, healing, and forgiveness, then our calling is to join Jesus in this kingdom-shaped living, in this kingdom-shaped life. Because the kingdom happens wherever the love and mercy of Jesus breaks into human lives. So what are we going to do with all of this? Well, we're invited to look again and see what God is doing. We're invited to notice the evidence of God's kingdom around us and pay attention to it. Where is God healing? Where is he restoring? Where is he softening our hearts? Where is he surprising us with his mercy? Secondly, we must let Jesus redefine our expectations. John had to lay down his expectations of how God should act, and we are called to do the same. Finally, if God's kingdom looks like healing, like mercy, forgiveness, and good news, then our lives must look like those things too. We aren't called to be spectators of this kingdom, but participants in it. We are to join Jesus in becoming people of blessing, in becoming good news people, people who bring healing. John asked a faith-filled question. Jesus gave a world-changing answer. God's kingdom continues to break in, quietly, gently, beautifully, in places where eyes are opened, lives are restored, and the poor hear good news. So this Advent, this Christmas season, may we be people who see what God is doing and join in. May we be people who welcome the kingdom as it is, not as we wish it would be. And may we be people who follow Jesus, the God who comes, not to destroy, but to restore. Let's be quiet. Are you the Messiah we've been expecting, or should we keep looking for someone else? Perhaps that's the question that we're sitting with through this Advent season. If we're in a season of disappointment or confusion, where we're struggling to recognize God's kingdom, it's okay to ask, is this really what the kingdom looks like? And yet, Jesus, we know too that you bring joy, that you invite us to go deeper, to have a deeper understanding of who you are. Would you give us the eyes to see, faith to believe, all that you're up to at this time? And Jesus, where might you be calling us to step up into this kingdom-shaped life? What is it you're calling us into as this year draws to a close and next year is before us? So Jesus, would we look to partner with you in this Christmas season and into the coming year?